You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 214, brought to you by Audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/iFanboy for a free trial. In stock trades and iFanboy listeners like you, and you, but not you on the left.
The snow's coming down. I'm watching it fall. Watching the people around. Baby, please come home. The church bells in town, they're ringing a song. But a happy sound.
Boy, Pick of the Week podcast, episode 214. I told them something funny that you're not going to hear before we started, but look how happy we are now. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
You don't even really want to hear it. That's the thing. It's best not.
So we're not even started, and I can't get it. Oh, keep talking.
FFboy.com is about comic books. We started the website because we like comic books, and every week we all read our stack of them. And then one of us has a job with picking the one that they like best, the best one, and they write about it on the Pick of the Week review that goes up Wednesday night. And then we come here, we talk about it on the podcast and other books from the week and some questions and some stuff and other things and whatever comes out. And there you go. At the end of the show, there's going to be more giveaways. You're probably thinking, if you haven't won, how come I haven't won something yet? I'm guessing you probably will soon, because that's how much stuff we're giving away. iFanboy does not guarantee that claim. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder, warning, this is a review show. So that means that in order to review something, we have to talk about what happened in it. And so therefore, we could spoil it for you. There may be some story details. There may be some things like that. And if you haven't read your books, you might want to hold off. I say, dive right in. The water is fine and there are only a couple of sharks. Connor, yep. You had
to
pick.
You know, we tend to pick a lot of number ones.
We do.
Comparatively, not like an overwhelming amount, but it's a pretty high percentage.
That's because we're from the USA. Number one.
Number one.
And I think one of those reasons is because there's a lot of thrill in discovery. There's a lot of thrill in finding something new and exciting, and that could be one reason why I stay single. And pick a lot of books, including Day Tripper number one. From Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon.
That was the most deadpan you've ever been, by the way. I mean, I was like, wow, you brought it way down. And then you just sent that one in under the radar, and it was a time bomb.
Day Tripper number one from Gabriel Ba, Fabio Moon, the twin brothers from Brazil, who are mostly known as artists. But here they've written and drawn this series. It's a 10-issue miniseries from Vertigo. This was a totally unexpected book. First of all, I'd heard of it. I knew that they were doing a book, but that's all I knew. I didn't know anything about it. When I opened the first page, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know a setup. I didn't know characters. I didn't know plot lines. I didn't know anything.
Love
that. And that was a really nice experience, to go in totally fresh and new, and then to be totally enthralled in this world. And by the end of this one issue, you have this strong sense of character and place and the city, and everything's alive in this book. And it's enveloping, but it's not overwhelmingly enveloping. It's sort of sly about us, because by the end of it, I was really into it, but didn't realize it was happening. You know?
No, I was totally lost in it. I was with when it ended, I was completely lost in the world that they created, and I didn't even see it happen.
You're out in the street wandering around.
Where the hell am I?
4 days later. It takes place in Sao Paulo, which is where the guys live, and it's about one man who just turned 32. It's his 32nd birthday, and I got to get his full name right.
Roz. I don't know how to pronounce
Roz
that.
Roz de Oliveira Domingos.
Yep. My Portuguese accent is not.
I'm going to call him Roz, even though there's an accent over the A. This is his 32nd birthday, and he's sort of having an examination of his life and himself, and where he is, what point he's at, and is he happy, and what is he going to do with his life? And it was a very contemplative issue, and you really got inside this guy's head. I feel like by the end of the issue, you really had a good sense of this character. And then Josh gave a spoiler warning, but I don't know if I want to spoil the end.
I would say don't.
No, that's, I can understand that.
Yeah, because the thing is that it is the first issue, and it's a limited series, right?
And it's a 10-issue series.
Yeah, the summary is supposed to be it's highlighting the day, the most important days of a person's life. And I was trying to explain to somebody why it was good, and I couldn't. You know, like, it's just good. Read it. Trust me. That's all I could say. You know, and I think part of that is the way that they weave the story and how they introduce you to this main character and then take you, you know, it's the standard, you know, I say standard and I'm not a writer, so what the fuck do I know? But it's the typical, it starts at the end and ends at the same point where it starts, you know, that sort of thing. Yep. So you start off not knowing anybody, what's going on, who's what, and then they take you, you know, they take you back and fill you in on who it is. And then it ends on the scene that the book starts at. And by that time, you've built up up in such a short period of time too. You built that such a connection to the character that when, you know, the end of the book happens, it's shocking.
That time shift is also punctuated by the color.
Yes.
Yep. You look at the beginning, it's like the first half of the first page is like a sepia toned
flashback.
And then, yeah. Well, that's his, the examples of his, the things he writes for dead people. Yep. They're called
obituaries.
Thank you. And then behind him, it's all red in that one scene at the very beginning. And then it switches to that sort of greenish yellow color, which is the whole present throughout the book until they go back. And that's what you get with Dave Stewart.
Anyway. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because I've heard stories how the brothers don't – I heard this when they worked on Casanova. The brothers refused to have – they never wanted their work colored. They always wanted their work to be black and white or, you know, or one color like it wasn't when they worked on Casanova. And it wasn't until Umbrella Academy when they worked with Dave Stewart, when they kind of got forced to work with Dave Stewart, where they're like, oh – this is how coloring works, you know. And now they'll only work with Dave Stewart. So.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he's got a good client list.
Yeah, he does.
Let's talk about the art. I thought the art was one of the strong points of it, and it didn't look like either one of the guys' typical style. You know, it didn't look like Casanova. Casanova was much more cartoony, and it didn't look like Umbrella Academy, which is also much more cartoony. This had a much more realistic look to it. Mm-hmm. And also, you don't really know who did what.
Yeah.
It's just listed as by the two guys. The website lists them in each role, but I think it's really a collaboration on both ends. But
yeah, I mean, it says, you know, chapter 1, 32 by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. I put them together there. By Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. Yeah, no, they, and I kind of wouldn't be surprised because their styles are a little similar. If you look
I don't know the difference.
I don't know the difference when I'm talking to them. But
know that.
Yeah, as we found out the hard way. But
they didn't know a word you were saying.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
but their styles are similar enough that I could totally see them jamming probably together on art chores as well. You know, I could picture them handing each other pages and tweaking and stuff like that. These guys are amazing. If you step back and look at it, I mean, this as of now, they have worked for Image, Dark Horse, and now DC. Mm-hmm. All they got to do is work for Marvel next. You know, like, you know, it's fascinating to see how prolific they've been in such a short period of time.
Yeah, and they've been huge. Like, I feel like they're the guys that everybody kind of wants to work with now.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was impressive about this was that we knew going into this, they're great artists. The art is the only thing in Casanova I really liked, and I love the art in Umbrella Academy. And the impressive thing was the story matched the art in this.
Yeah.
And as great as the art was, it really was the story that drew you in, and really the story was affecting you, and by the end, it really is the story that punches you in the gut. And I don't know if it was because I'm the same age as the main character, and he thinks about the same stuff you think about on your birthday, and I thought about it just like a couple months ago, and I can relate a lot to what he's thinking, and all that goes along with it, but there's just something really powerful about this issue.
Yeah.
Tell you what, he did 3 pages of fantastic dog. This has been the year of the dog in comics, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can only think of Crypto, but
the brief synopsis of the issue is that this guy, it's his birthday, he's an obituary writer for the paper. He really wants to be a novelist, but doesn't really work on his novel. He's got a very famous writer as a father, and he feels like he's in his shadow, and then his father's having a gala in his honor on the same day as his birthday, and nobody's paying attention to his birthday. And so there's a lot of internal struggle about who he is and his identity in this issue.
And the thing about that is, like, the way that Connor just explained it to you, it seemed like it would all be very clear, but it isn't. You kind of have to pick up all of those things as you're reading it. They don't really come out with any of that stuff. They just sort of hint at it. Like, he never
says it. It comes out in the dialogue. He never flat out says, I feel inadequate. You have to pick that up from this conversation.
It's very organic in that way. It's one of the things that really impressed me about it, is that at the beginning, you are lost a little bit. You're like, I don't know what's going on. But by the end, it's all clear as day. I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's written, and this came up a little bit on the website, as if people were like, well, it wasn't written all that well. And it was like, these guys don't speak native as their English language. So I heard it as a Brazilian telling me a story in English. I don't know if I heard it with an accent or heard it with it, but it made it sort of authentic to me. Like, it felt, you know.
It's fascinating. I mean, looking at the cover and the signature on the cover, the art signature is Gabriel Ba. But then on the last page in the bottom corner, says Fabio.
Mm-hmm. This is really
looks
the only
very
thing.
Much more like Gabriel Ba. That looks like Umbrella Academy style, whereas the inside doesn't at all.
Yeah,
the inside really feels like a collaboration between the two guys.
It really does. It's amazing.
I don't know. I'm just inferring what I see, but that's really what it looks like.
Why wasn't this a dollar? Vertigo's been doing that whole first issue dollar thing. I wanted this one to be a dollar so I could give people no excuse to read it.
Maybe after they've done it several times, it wasn't worth it.
But they're doing the Grant Morrison one as a dollar.
Well, then they can't have the loss on the two books.
I know. This is the kind of book that I want to hand, like, in the store. I want on Wednesday. I was telling people, pick it up. Trust me.
You know what? This is the kind of book that if you're going to hand it to people, you can only hand it to people who are already buying regular weekly comics. And after that, you really have to wait for the trade paper.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because it's going to be it's a 10-part story, and I have a feeling you're going to have to read the whole thing. Yeah. You know, and
totally. It's gonna. You're not gonna know you don't know what the overall story of Day Tripper is. By the way, I kept typing Day Trippers whenever I wrote my review.
Great movie.
I think it's gonna get somewhat supernatural. I think it has to.
Really?
Yep.
I don't think so. I think it's just gonna be.
I think it's just a story of a guy.
Celebration of days of his life.
Well, the thing happened to him, but we'll see.
Yeah. It was great, though.
What I was saying was, I think we're not going to know what the overall theme of it is until you get to the end. I think you're going to have these days of his life, and then at the end, you're going to realize the story these days are telling.
Yeah.
But I think it was a beautifully done. It was beautiful. It was stereotypical Brazilian beauty. Everything is beautiful.
Yeah, I love Brazil. Hands down, this was my pick of the week as well. I mean, like, and it was funny because I sat down with my stack of books this week and I thought, with a couple of exceptions, there was nothing I was really excited about. And I started off reading my books kind of annoyed at it being a bum week. And, you know, I'd almost make the argument that if Day Tripper hadn't come out, you know, if Day Tripper come out on another week, you know, more popular or more, you know, bigger deal books might have gotten in the way of it. So it came out on the right week. But then also, even though I thought it was a bum week.
I don't think that's true at all.
Well, hang on. No. Let me finish the thought. Even though I thought it was a bum week, it was actually a really solid week. It was a really strong week. There's a lot of good stuff. And so I was I was pleasantly surprised by a lot of books this week.
Let me tell you about, I'm reading New Avengers Annual. And I open it up and I start going through it and I think to myself, I do not like this art at all.
Mike Mayhew.
Yeah, no, I was not down with it. However, I am not made of stone. and, you know, at the end of it, I'll be honest with you, I completely forgot about the art. And I may even like the art a little bit at the end because I was having too much fun with this issue to know otherwise. This is going to be my favorite Avengers issue in forever. Now, I'm not going to say why. I don't know.
We talked about it last week with the other annual, and I think this was just as good as that one. And the last two annuals have been great. Against all odds, especially what we've been talking about the last year, I am psyched for Siege.
I love it. It's great.
A lot of it has to do with this issue. By the time you get to the last page, I was fist pumping.
Yeah.
You know? I'm feeling like I'm like, okay, it's time to make the Clint Barton move now.
Yeah,
well, very soon. And I was like, this whole time I was kind of reading it with this anticipation, like, maybe it'll happen in here.
What move?
Back to Hawkeye.
Oh, he's not doing that. He's going to be Ronin. I already found that out.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. I have no inside information. I'm just teasing.
I know. Don't do that. You know what's funny is that, like, and I can detach myself. People ask me all the time. They're like, well, what if they ruined Hawkeye? I'm like, I really don't care. But when I do read a good Hawkeye story and it's cool, I'm like, oh, this is fun. And it was a little silly from the idea that those girls could go and break into everything and that would be it. I'm so sick of the Sentry being the cleanup guy.
Yep.
That's really annoying me. But I liked the rest of the scenes. I liked that they were torturing Clint.
Did you like the flashback, the mind flashback page?
Yeah.
That page.
I like.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Did he need to be naked while they were torturing him?
That's yes. I thought it was perfect because that's the thing is they were completely taking him down.
Yeah.
And
I love that
when he did it, you thought that's really stupid. Yeah. Whenever it was that he took off for there, and this time he was like, that was really stupid. And Bendis kind of cleaned everything up a little simply, but I'm fine with it because I wanted him to because I thought it was a dumb decision and like he's going to go kill Norman Osborn or whatever. But then the other thing that I really liked about this one is that they destroyed Steve Rogers' house.
I know.
I was like, wow, that's a big deal. And it was almost an afterthought in an annual. I was like, you need to read this if you've been reading all this stuff because you're going to miss stuff if you don't.
Yeah, this is if you're an Avenger reader and you didn't pick this up, this is a must read for numerous reasons.
I feel like we can talk about the last page because we did the same thing last week.
Well, we have to. Yeah, we already talked about
the same last page. And the reason why I was so psyched was because the girls, all the female Avengers, go and rescue Clint from the clutches of the Dark Avengers. And meanwhile, the house gets destroyed, his Brooklyn building, which is really, really valuable these days.
And Jessica Jones, by the way.
She dons
her costume again.
And she says, I might keep doing this.
Jewel's back.
And then at the end, they're sort of regrouping, and they say, what are we going to do now? And then Steve Rogers appears in his Captain America costume.
Yep. Well, no, what I thought was great was that
my outfit, he says, we're taking down Norman Osborn. And that's when I pumped my fist for two reasons. One, Steve's back in his costume. And two, it's metaphorical because they'll be ending all the Norman Osborn stories.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. I thought it was great how they brought him in, how Bucky, you know, kind of takes his mask off and just goes, oh, man, Steve's going to kill me. And it just
he said Steve Rogers is going to kill me. That's what threw me off. That line threw me off because it's like I wouldn't be talking to Josh and say, "Man, Ron Richards is going to be so mad."
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I did like
the off page that. Well, I'm not thrilled, you know. And then you turn the page and there he is pointing at you. It was great. It was really good.
You know, I think the thing is this shows me. This is what I'm learning about Bendis and Marvel is that I like when he does character study stuff, but I feel like he's been doing it for a long, 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 long time, and like he's finally getting to move the plot forward on this thing, and it's so much more satisfying because we haven't really had any plot movement on what are we in, the Dark Reign?
Nothing's happened.
And now something, you know, it's the same complaint that we had about Secret Invasion. I think all of us, I can say that. But when the things move, hey, it's a good time, you know. And you might complain, you might think, oh, it's too early for Steve Rogers. But to see him, I was like, who? It's Steve Rogers.
Yep. And the other thing is, he was supposed to come back a long time ago.
Like two weeks ago.
No. What I mean is, original Brubaker story had him only dead for a couple of issues.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you guys know, and people listening who have been listening, they know I'm not a continuity stickler.
Yep.
They blew this.
Oh, big time.
I mean, they just, that's terrible. That the book that you hyped that it was supposed to happen and didn't happen in it.
Yep.
Weren't you on the show last week?
He was.
Yeah. I didn't get to
the conversation last week.
No, but I think he read this issue and mulled it over. Yes. And I'm glad you've come around. I mean, it's a tough thing because I know we always say it doesn't matter. Read the books. It's a story. You can piece it together yourself. But for something as this and with all the hype that they did, they blew it.
We know they blew up. The thing is, they have no choice but to blow it. And the same thing happened this week in Invincible Iron Man. He apparently showed up in that one too, and now in the costume. So
yes, he did.
There's nothing they can do. They have to blow it because
the cat's out of the bag. Yeah,
and I actually respect that. They had to make the choice, and they went with it. And I think that's a better thing than stalling. I mean, imagine
and DC's doing that with Flash too. They have to have to just move forward with these two characters.
DC probably waited a little too long, but yeah,
these Aryans screwing everything up.
It's a really similar book. It was Phonogram. that's not in any way true.
So
Ron, you're gonna get mad at me, but this is my least favorite issue.
No, it's okay. I could see that.
I didn't really like this very much at all.
Well, because this one was pretty out there. But this one was pretty. I mean,
because it went off script. And the whole thing I liked about the series was that it was focusing on the club and the night at the club and seeing that night from different angles. And now we've totally left that. And
this is the second to last issue. This is issue 6 of 7. This one focuses on the character Lloyd, and it picks up where the last issue left off at when he, you know, angrily ends up at home by himself, and he, you know, full of ideas and full of his, you know, his plan. And he sits down and starts putting together his plan, and that's when it goes out of the sequential art and into the zine like, you know, kind of stuff, which had great writing, you know. And
I liked it from a standpoint of it was interesting. And
yeah.
I liked the fact that in the middle it was basically a zine done by this guy. But the thing is, I liked the story that was happening before, and I liked the series. Yeah. I don't necessarily care about what's happening here.
I'm curious to see how it wraps up in the seventh issue, how it all works together, how they're going to tie together all these characters, you know, because they're all loosely tied. Every character is loosely tied to another somehow. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to see what the last issue is going to bring and how it wraps up and how the actions of this scene, you know, because this is building towards something. There's only one more issue. It's got to go somewhere. But I could see the complaint. This one was it was light on sequential art, and it was also very focused on story, potentially not in of the things that we love about it.
You said one issue left, but so at this point you should know what the story is.
Yeah, right.
You don't. And the thing is, when it was just the club, that was the story. It was this night at the club from different everybody's perspective. And now we've apparently got a plot that started in the sixth issue.
Yeah.
So, or the end of the fifth, the last couple of pages of the fifth into the sixth, and really you should be almost over by then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll of course, because I love the book and it's better than anything else that's out there, I'll wait till the last issue to decide. But I do see those complaints. I think they're valid. That said, though, of all the Phonogram issues that have come out to date, musically specifically, this one freaked me out the most because Los Campesinos and Camera Obscura were the main bands, and I was just like, oh, like even the title of the character's name is Lloyd, and the issue is called Ready to Be Heartbroken. That's a Camera Obscura song, and there's a whole thing on Los Campesinos, and it's just like, oh, it's getting too close. But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's tough because I know, and McKelvey tweeted it the other day, like he's finishing up issue 6, and after that there'll be no more Phonogram, and that makes me sad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a tough blow, and the same day that issue came out, when he said there would never be a third unless some sort of miracle happened. So
he's very coy about it.
Yeah,
there will be no third volume. If only Coppola had said that.
Ron, who are the young upstart creators behind the new pilot season at Top Cow?
Well, so the first Top Cow pilot season books comes out, and it's this one's called Murderer, and it's written by Robert Kirkman, and it's conceived by Kirkman and Silvestri, but with
he put some notes on the script,
but with and a cover by Silvestri, but with the pencils by Nelson Blake II, and. I picked this up because I was curious and about it, and I'm always curious about the pilot season, and this year the whole pilot season theme is going to be all around Kirkman and Silvestri creating things. I really liked this a lot, actually. I thought it was a different kind of Kirkman that I wasn't kind of used to. It was a little more serious, a little more, kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
I'm not just a silly guy. I did anything.
He makes Geoff Johns look lazy.
Yeah, he does. And I thought Nelson Blake's art was really good. I thought it had a very, kind of clean line kind of style that, which I'm a big fan of. I saw a little bit of Otley at times, but I also saw a little bit of Gary Frank and a little bit of people like that. I don't know. At the end of the issue, I found it really interesting. The premise is that it's a guy who is a telepath who can hear everyone's thoughts. And for some reason, the only way that he can focus, the only way he can deal with it is by focusing on somebody who deserves to die and then killing them. Hence the title.
He's like Dexter, Josh.
Yeah, kind of Dextery. Yes, kind of Dextery.
That makes perfect sense. I'd say that's what I would do.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm not even telepathic. I'm surprised I haven't done it yet. But
I killed a hobo.
He deserved it.
Yeah,
that was the thing. He was
dirty. That's all I know.
But
he was trying to steal Josh's beans.
But what was interesting was that the character did. He found a girl who's being abused by her boyfriend, and he follows her home and kills her boyfriend. And he happens to kill the boy. The boyfriend happens to be in some shady business, and he's got a bag of money in a safe that is not legit. And so to thank him, she hands him the money, and he gives the money to a guy who tried to mug him earlier in the issue. So the character has redeeming qualities. Like, the character's not all bad, even though he's murdering, similar to Dexter. I guess I didn't put the Dexter connection in, and now that you said it, it's like, fuck, this is just Dexter. But it's like if Dexter was a telepath. That's all it is.
And didn't have a terrible supporting cast.
Yeah. awful. Ooh. Anyway, but I really did enjoy it. I thought it, like I said, it surprised me. I thought it was really good, and I got to the end of the first issue, and I realized I'm like, oh crap, I'm gonna have to wait for the second issue now because we got to.
I thought I'd pick it up, but then I thought I'd wait for the other pilot season books that were supposed to come out.
Okay, are they late or?
I don't think they've come out at all.
No, this is the first one, right?
I know what you're saying. You're talking about the ones that won.
Yes.
I see. Right. I got you. The previous pilot season ones. Yeah.
There are many of those.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
There was Joe Casey was going to do one.
Yeah.
But 4 years ago.
Yeah. I forgot about those. Right.
Yeah. Remember the really good ones we read last year? Twilight Guardian. And
yeah. Yeah. We talked about them on the video show too, didn't we? Yeah.
The whole show about them.
Yeah.
They're real good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll wait for those.
Ouch. Well, then.
Keep waiting.
Well, I gave it a shot. I liked it. Hopefully.
Josh.
Yeah.
Take us back to old-timey Russia.
I remember Stalin. I remember him well. Second issue of Black Widow number 2. I think it followed the first one in the same way that going back through her history was a lot more fun than the stuff that was happening now.
The art thing bothers me to no end.
Yeah. Yeah,
because the thing is that I want an entire issue by Jean-Paul Lyonne in this telling this story.
But seriously, wasn't the best part of this like the love triangle stuff between Stark and Barton and Natasha? And it was great.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun reading this actually.
This was a really really strong week for Paul Cornell.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he had a lot of books this week.
Yeah, he had a lot of books. Black Widow: Deadly Origin was really good. I mean, the writing was good. The art bothers me. Dark X-Men number 2 came out as well. It was also a second issue week for him too. Black Widow number 2, Dark X-Men number 2. And Dark X-Men, despite the Rolling Stone references, I really enjoy it as well. And he's working with Leonard Kirk on it. So it's, if you enjoyed Captain Britain and you like the X-Men, then this book is totally up your alley. But like, even with these characters who I don't really give a crap about, Mystique and Mimic and the Dark Beast and this Omega guy. And now that they've brought back X-Man from the 90s, the Nate Grey character. But after I finished the issue, I'm like, that was really good. It was just really, really solid. I was happy to see that. And then over in Nation X number 1, the 4-issue kind of anthology book that Marvel's doing around the current X-Men thing, a bunch of small stories, and Leonard Kirk also did the pencils on, not with Paul Cornell though, but he did pencils for one of the stories that was just really, really good as well. Like, I really like this one. There's a Mike Allred story in it. Yeah, so it was, and there was a great, great Iceman story. Weren't we just talking about Iceman a couple weeks ago? About how he doesn't do anything. Yeah. So the Iceman story in here, basically, he's the only source of water on the island. Chris Yost wrote it, and it's a great take on Iceman, and it's like several days in the life of Iceman, and like they go through his, you know, he's talking about how life is great and how he's like, you know, 9 a.m. go to the X-Men meeting, you know, make fun of Namor, you know, then like hit on Dazzler, and like it's him making jokes, and Chris Yost is playing up the kind of fun loving Bobby Drake, and there's a subplot of him making fun of Namor at every chance he gets, and Namor wanted to kill him, and you know, but then it gets really serious. But Yost did a great job fleshing out Iceman as a character who we haven't seen really, you know, do anything in years. So it was like one surprise after another, you know, from Paul Cornell to these X-Men stuff that I was pleasantly surprised.
I feel like Iceman would be such an easy character to grab onto and do something with.
Yeah.
Although in my mind, he doesn't seem much different to me than like Johnny Storm. I think that's the characterization of him in my head is almost the same. Right.
Well, the last time they did anything with him was when in the early 2000s, when he was kind of sleeping with Mystique, and I think she was pushing him, or no, Emma Frost is pushing Bobby to use his powers differently, and he realized he controlled moisture, and it basically took it beyond just that Iceman with on a ice slide, you know, kind of version that we've seen. But then after that, nobody's done anything with him, and this is just a little 8-page story, but it got the tone of the character down. It was funny, it was poignant, it showed his importance in the X-Men, shows importance, you know, at his role being able to control water, as well as the history of being an X-Man, you know. Like it was really
he could
good.
Just travel through Sahara and Africa and spread water.
Yeah, but yeah, no.
Do that, Ron.
I don't know. I'll ask him. But yeah, no, it was great. It was great to read great stuff by Paul Cornell, and then also with this X-Men stuff that I didn't. I totally went. And that's the thing. Like I said earlier, I totally went into it thinking it was going to suck. I was like, whatever, you know. But it was good. What?
But you bought it anyway.
I bought it anyway. Yes, that was good. But you know what else I would buy? I would buy an audiobook if I could. But I would buy an audiobook from Audible, because Audible is the best place online to buy audiobooks. You can download them to your iPod or any device that you can listen to music on. You can download. Not only do they have audiobooks, but they've got podcasts, they've got speeches, they've got anything that's audio entertainment, you can get at Audible. They've got over 60,000 titles across all genres, including, you know, fiction, nonfiction, history, you know, romance, science fiction, whatever you want. So if you go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy, you can sign up there and get a free audiobook and then get a 14-day trial. It's the holidays. Treat yourself to an audiobook. Get a little book learning on you. Some people say they refer to listening to audiobooks as reading. I don't do that, but I'm not against it. So
it's not reading.
Yeah, they say I read that book, you know, and it's like, well, you read it? Well, no, I listened to it on Audible. But still.
Okay, this is a semantic argument that we don't need to get into, and you know,
Connor,
can't be good for the sponsor.
I believe you made a pick.
My Audible pick is American on Purpose: The Improbable Adventures of an Unlikely Patriot by Craig Ferguson, the late night talk show host and comedian. It's 7 hours and 24 minutes long. That's a lot of entertainment.
So
he's very funny, and he's reading it.
Oh,
it would probably be very fun.
So you can get that for free.
Sign up and you can get it for free. You get one credit.
Just go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy. You can get that for free, and it's almost 8 hours of entertainment. Doesn't get better than
that. You know what else you get for free is when you sign up, you get a free credit every month for a book.
Oh, nice. Even better.
So you get a free book every month.
Lovely.
My pick of the week, had I been given the opportunity, and I'm sure I would have disappointed everybody, was BPRD War on Frogs #4. I don't know if you guys have – at some point basically in the last year or two, I jumped on BPRD. I just started reading it, following my own advice, as it were. Apparently there's a big backstory, and if you've read the whole thing, it'll make it better. But I've been enjoying it pretty well along the way, because there's lots of really good craftsmanship going on it. And this is – War on Frogs has just sort of been coming out here and there, and this is the fourth issue. But it's a single story on its own. Johan's the ghost in the glass sort of fishbowl head, and he's a telepath. It's a story about him, and they go in and they kill a bunch of frogs, which is kind of what they do. If they were the Ghostbusters, the frogs would be the Slimers. And they finish killing the frogs, and they look, and Johan looks, and there are these ghost frogs everywhere. And they're just like, what do we do now? And they follow him around, and he can't figure out how to get rid of them. And it's just like a single-issue ghost story. And, you know, it's a one-issue tale. It's just really well done, and I put it down. I finished, and I was like, that's how you do a single issue. And it's such a thing that we don't see it that often. So when it's done really well, like when just one issue of a comic book is done really well, I stand up and take notice. Art on this one was by Peter Snaberg, who you may remember from the first few issues of The Mighty and later issues of Starman, and one of my favorites very much, and Dear Billy last year also, or earlier this year.
Snaberg.
It's Snaberg.
That's nowhere near as fun as Snaregebjerg.
I know. Snaregebjerg. Really just a fantastic issue, though. What I'm saying, though, is that if you were thinking about that, you could go pick up this one issue. You'll get it. You'll be fine. And just start reading. I know it seems like it's number four, which is also
– And it is.
Which is number 63 in a series. And you think, oh, I don't know, but just it's good. And just trust me on this one. Really fantastic single issue. Cool. Just a ghost story, if nothing else.
Things I can do without in Adventure Comics number 5. All of the DC editorial staff drawn in a comic book.
I loved that. It was such a throwback.
It was. It really was.
The whole book is about that.
I did chuckle when I saw it. Seeing Mike Carlin and Eddie Braganza and all a bunch of the other editors and people who work at DC was kind of funny. It did get a little long. I thought the meta stuff, the reality stuff did get a little long, but that's this whole story has. Things I could do with the next chapter of the Superboy story with Manipul art.
Yep.
Oh, God, I didn't even expect that. I thought this whole issue was going to be Superboy Prime, and then I turned the page and saw the Superboy Manifold stuff, and I got so happy.
That was a great little piece. That was a great piece, and the cliffhanger was great. But my favorite page in this whole thing was when they were trashing the DC offices.
Yeah.
The double-edged sword with the drawing a real person is the facial expressions, and there's one guy running from the disaster who looks very, very calm. Because clearly he used a picture.
Yeah, if I see it, I'm looking at it.
And it's just kind of like, oh, these superheroes just crashed through our office window. I'm just going to be out here. No big deal. But they used to do that all the time in the old Silver Age sales. They used to always, the real offices were always trashed. It happened to Marvel, happened to DC.
Yeah, it happened a lot to Marvel, yeah. Did you like the little journey through all the colors for Superboy Prime?
I understood why, but I think the story was long.
Yeah,
I think that's for sure.
It was long.
I liked the Manipul stuff a lot, and I liked the cliffhanger was great. It was totally unexpected, and they have how many issues? One left? Yeah, one left.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
When John's a Manipul issue left?
Yeah, so good, so wonderful.
Punisher Max 2 was fucked up.
It reminded this is the closest that the feeling I get from reading this book is how it felt when I was watching Oz.
Yeah.
That's what it
I
felt
can see
like.
That.
Yeah.
This is the closest book I have ever read to somebody doing Garth Ennis style.
Yes.
And I don't mean that as a knock because I don't feel like he was ripping off Garth Ennis. I just thought that Jason Aaron tapped. I like this issue a lot more than the first one. That should be said. I just felt like he tapped into whatever weird thing it is that Garth Ennis can do, and he did it really well.
And to that point, my only concern about it is I wonder if working with Dylan is doing him a disservice because Dylan is so associated to Ennis. In everything that he's done from Preacher to the Punisher run and all stuff like that, that as I'm reading it, you're right, it was very close to what Ennis is doing. I'm wondering if there was a different artist, if it would be more of his own.
I don't know. I just think, and I don't want to say.
Don't get me wrong, it was great. It was good.
I don't think he was doing Ennis's style. It was that intangible quality that Ennis can do that had a little bit, like his characterization was very strong.
Yeah.
But the events that happened were also very extreme.
Yeah, I mean, it was disturbing. Disturbing.
Which is really exactly why Scalped is good. So it makes sense to me.
Sure.
I don't know if it – I mean, that's just reminding – I mean, that's their trap. He's working with Steve Dillon, so.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I just wonder – maybe disservice is too strong of a word, but just – I don't know. I think if it was a different artist, it might be a little more, you know, unique or individual. It wouldn't remind me of Dillon. You know.
If I was trying to do a new original thing, I wouldn't have put Dylan on this book. But if I'm trying to sell books.
Yeah, true. I love my favorite panel is when he goes to get revenge on the guy in prison who gang raped him. When he goes to the guy's wife and he's just sitting in the chair and then he lifts up the Polaroid camera and takes the picture. Facial expression never changes, you know?
Your favorite, that one.
Yeah. That's Walking Dead 68. Let's quickly put that behind us.
Yeah, that's a good call. Neither of you guys are reading this in issues. Basically, in this one, a creepy guy shows up.
Okay.
And if you've been reading along with this, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. A creepy guy shows up, and it looks like they're going to get off the road for a while, which is what needs to happen. And so, because of that, it was fun. It was a good issue, and I felt like it was time for a little turn of events and some things to happen, and Kirkman put it in there exactly at the right time. Not only did Creepy Guy show up, but I think Creepy Guy has a creepy twin.
Was he Viggo Mortensen?
Could have been. No, Viggo can't smile like that. Okay. He was somebody else, but I don't have time to think of a good casting for it.
Right. Well, all the way on the other side from Walking Dead and The Punisher Max is DC Universe Holiday Special 2009, which I love these holiday specials. I was so disappointed when the Marvel one was half reprints and in magazine format, like $9.
Yeah.
That was too bad. But the DC one is traditional. It's comic size. It only cost $5. It was like 80 pages, and it had people like Sterling Gates wrote a story, and Fred Van Lente wrote a good Martian Manhunter story, and Howard Chaykin drew an NMEA story, and Billy Tucci wrote and drew a Sergeant Rock story, and it was.
I was surprised at Fred Van Lente because I don't remember him doing DC before.
I don't think he's exclusive to Marvel. I just think he's.
You just associate him with Marvel because it's like Amy Wolfram did a Flash story. It was, you know, it was just really, you know, it's what it is. It's a very heartwarming, and I saw people calling it like sappy and saccharine, but that's what it is. You go into it knowing that. You either buy it and know that's what you're going to get.
That's why you don't have Jason Aaron doing your DC holiday special.
Although that would be awesome. I bet you he'd do a good one because he's like the nicest man on the planet.
Yeah. He really is. He's a big teddy bear. The Marvel holiday special.
Hugging him.
The Marvel holiday stuff I think is going to be online on digital, and I think there's a Stan Lee Fantastic Four story with stuff by Nick Dragota, who is a great artist doing Kirby kind of style, and it looks really pretty. But it's online. It's
awesome. You know what I like? You know how you always listen to the Todd. Who the fuck is Todd?
The
Tom versus the JLA podcast. You just talk about how the Justice League was like a corporation or a company. Well, I love the JLA Christmas party.
Oh yeah,
because it's like they have the awkward banner hanging in the satellite, and they have like the present exchange and the Secret Santa. It's very much like an awkward job.
Were there rules? There's always
rules.
Yeah, there's always. was there paperwork to be filled out?
It's always like that, and then actually it continues on with because it's Dick Grayson Batman in this one. He's like, well, you can't change your person. I've already bought my gift. Like, you know, it was just like.
Really?
Oh yeah,
that's so classic JLA. That's awesome.
I want to have Connor explain it to me though.
He wants to switch with Dick and he won't because he doesn't want to buy a gift for somebody else, and it's just very, you know, incongruous and funny and heartwarming.
Happy holidays. Enjoy your DC holiday special. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can see all the books that came out this week and rate and review them. Do your pull lists and all that fun stuff. And so on to the user reviews. And Connor, why don't you give us the first one?
Leonard from Batgirl number four. Like it's a city in Oklahoma. Leonard reviewed Batgirl number four. He gave the story a 5 out of 5, the art a 4 out of 5. And 11.7% of the iFanboys made it their pick of the week. This was like the third highest picked book.
Wow.
And they were right. Leonard says, this book is immersed in the Batworld, stays true to Gotham and the Batfam without being derivative or codependent. The elevator pitch, Ultimate Spider-Man set in the world of Batman and Robin. It has that USM humor and sass, forehead slap, and there's a panel joke with Damian that almost made me piss my pants, The Omen. This issue explores a lot of the personal dynamics between Oracle, Batman, Batgirl, and Robin. And this was the runner-up pick of the week. This was a great issue. This was an issue, if you've all been curious about the book, you should pick up. It's a starting point of a new arc. They explain everything. Damian and Dick Grayson Batman show up, and Brian K. Miller is the writer of this. He wrote a great Damian, and Damian, of course, hates the new Batgirl.
Of course.
He wants to kill her.
What doesn't he like? He's like Dwight.
Yeah, he doesn't like fun at all. It's awful.
Yeah. Anyway. It was really good. Really strong issue. Really, really strong issue. Pick it up.
All right. Our next review comes from Cubman987, who reviewed Amazing Spider-Man number 614. And he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5. And at the time of this review, 0.60% of you made it your pick of the week. And Cubman987 says, the art is still inconsistent for me in this issue. I kind of like the old school take on Spider-Man, but the rest of the art is either just okay or not that well done. I especially disliked how Peter and Betty were drawn at the end of the issue. It just didn't work for me. Overall, I really liked the issue. It's not the best issue of Amazing Spider-Man I ever read, but it ended this arc on a high note and a serious impact on this Amazing Spider-Man universe. And we're gonna argue the art conversation stuff first, but damn, the end of this issue got me. Like I was like they went there. I couldn't believe
it's a good week for Damage Control.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Jeez.
Bad week for property value in the Marvel universe, but in this issue Daily Bugle building was destroyed along with Captain America's building in the other book, but they basically destroyed the Daily Bugle.
There's a two-page spread of, you know, Spider-Man and J. Jonah running out of the building, and then a half a page panel of the building crumbling, and then the next page, which I thought was brilliant, was black with one panel with J. Jonah just staring at the rubble.
I thought that was a great page.
And it was like the view from the rubble, so you just see Jonah looking at it. And of course, Spider-Man's, you know, he's carrying Dexter Bennett, he's handing him to the paramedics and that sort of thing. But that page was just a punch in the gut. It was amazing. Now, on the art side, I love the art.
I think Paul Azaceta should draw Spider-Man whenever they get him.
I'm with you.
The last two issues I thought have been spectacular. And like they were one of those issues, as I was reading them, I was so happy with the art that I wanted to tweet out on every single page. Like, have you seen what he is doing with Spider-Man right now? Amazing. Yeah. That's what I think.
Well, Fred Van Lente is up next with Javier Pulido, who's a similar style.
Yeah. Pulido is very similar to your man.
Oh,
Marcos Martin.
It's Javier Pulido. I thought it was Brian Pulido.
No.
And I was like, that's an interesting choice.
The guy?
Yeah, the Lady Death guy. Anyway, so go to ifanboy.com/comics and tell everybody what you thought of this week's comics.
Huge boobs.
And in stock trades, you can get your trades for store up to 37% off. You get free shipping on orders over $50 with over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order anytime you want. New releases are listed every Wednesday, and orders usually ship within 48 hours from www.instocktrades.com.
Oh, we didn't mention Red Herring number 5 came out. Uh-huh. Nice little iFanboy quote there on the cover, boys. So yeah, Sonya's words about a Red Herring made the cover. That's pretty cool.
I did a double take at the store.
Yeah.
I didn't write that.
Oh. Book of the month.
Book of the month came to me. Luckily, this month, it's December, and there are holidays, so I could pick something based on the time.
I was surprised. I was surprised you went in that direction because I didn't. You don't really.
Because you think that I'm a huge Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah.
I'm not.
I don't see you as the sentimental type.
I am not outward about it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
If that makes sense.
Sure.
I don't like. Simple sentimentality doesn't get me, but real stuff does.
Okay.
How's that?
I love you.
I love you too. Want you inside me? Oh, that was not PG. I went with, which is appropriate since this month's book of the month is A Kidnap Santa Claus, an L. Frank Baum story as adapted by Alex Robinson, whose work is not PG usually, except for this one is. I chose this book for a couple of reasons. One, I don't know if you've noticed, it's a Christmas book. So there you go. Other than that, though.
What's with the Christmas bias, by the way? Hmm? What's with the Christmas bias? You can't pick a...
What are you, Fox News?
You hate the Jewish people?
Carry on.
My wife's Jewish. Damn it.
You know
and
black
two,
people too?
It's I know this. I don't have talked to him in a while. I don't know if that counts. I lived with one. I mean, with him.
Anyway.
That's a joke.
Is your best friend gay?
My brother is. Not that one.
All right, continue with the book. Alex Robinson. He draws pretty.
You weren't supposed to out me. Kidnap Santa Claus. The reason that I picked it is because at this time of year when people are giving a lot of gifts, I think this will make a really good gift to a bunch of different kinds of people. For one thing, it's the kind of book that you know, it's good for kids, but there's enough in it for adults that they could like it. I don't want to say it's like Pixar, but that same sort of thing where, you know, it sort of works for both people. Two, it's not – the content is not objectionable in any way like
There's no nudity. He usually likes to throw a full frontal male nudity in his books.
He throws a lot of nudity in his books and, they, you know – it deals with adult subjects a lot, and this isn't that. What it is this: A Kidnap Santa Claus is a 1904 story written by L. Frank Baum, the same guy who wrote The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and it was originally 11 pages. And so from out of that, he got this 67 page graphic novel. So you got to flesh it out a lot and build in characters that weren't there, and just kind of have fun with it. And so there's these little touches of his personality as a cartoonist and his sense of humor that if you've liked from his other books, you're going to find them in here. But it's also kind of just a straight up sort of simple Christmas story. Some demons want to ruin Christmas, so they kidnap Santa Claus and they figure that'll do it. But, you know, Santa's helpers, you know, they go and deliver everything on their own, but they don't have the list. Who gets what and who goes where? But they say, you know what, we got to do it anyway. So they just go and they deliver everything and they save Christmas. And there's like a tiny little cute love story that goes on between the one girl, Pixie, who's like an elf, and, you know, the guy helper. I forget his name. You know, and it's just cute. It's simple. And I think if, you know, little girls and little boys will really get a lot out of it. But I think it's one of those things that, you know, grown-ups won't mind reading to their kids so much. And also, you know, it's just comics. It's good. It's cartoons and it's good stuff. And, you know, Alex has been around for a very long time and he knows how to draw a book and it's fun, but it's a little sort of nice size book. It really makes like a nice stocking stuffer. It's a good Christmas story. I had a lot of fun reading it basically. And I was happy about the idea that it's just such a good sort of gateway thing, but, you know, sort of only at this time of year. So it's a good thing for people to know about.
So I assume Alex Robinson's signature art thing isn't in this book because it's a children's book.
Penises?
Yes.
No, there's not a single penis.
Is this his first work with no penis?
It might be.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be. Yes. Yes, it is.
Santa doesn't come out of the shower.
Can you hand me my towel, Billy?
At no point has he had pedophilia in a book, I don't believe.
Having a towel boy doesn't make you a pedophile.
No, it's definitely not.
That's what my lawyer told me.
He does little things like there would be... Yeah, I'm going to push through. You'll see little notes of characters from his other books that sort of show up in here in the forms of the demon. And you know, it's just little fun things. There's some, you know, Star Wars references and stuff, because that's the kind of stuff that he likes. And it's the stuff that's been in there. And it's just a good little book.
I like the idea of the modern updating of an older story. I think that's good.
Is it in public domain now? Was that why?
I'm not sure. It must be. But I know that... Like, the original story didn't have much detail in it, so he got to put all this stuff in, you know, and they had to choose what stuff they wanted or not. You know, like, they're in the book, he doesn't live at the North Pole, he lives at the Laughing Valley, so they kept that in here, and there were some other things that they changed. So a lot of it, like, if you read the story, a lot of what has become the modern Santa myth has changed a lot now. Yeah. So he updated some of it and kept some of it.
I think Coca-Cola is responsible for a lot of what we consider Hispanic.
Probably.
I think it's true.
Well, they sponsor Santa now, right?
A long time ago, they used to have the ads. I think they fleshed out the character in the ads.
Yeah, the Norman Rockwell stuff. Yeah,
but you can see pages from this on MyFanboy at Josh's review. But also, we talked about it on the video show last week and the gift show. So if you want to see pages, go check that out, and you can see for yourself that there are no penises anywhere.
It's a nice little book. It really is.
It's a fun little story. It's not going to win a Pulitzer Prize, but it makes a good gift for all sorts of different types of people, and it's just one of the good comics. I guess I want to put it that way.
Well, Alex is great. He's one of the best, you know, kind of independent cartoonists around, I think. And so it's fun to see him do a little project like this.
He's never adapted anything else.
Yeah.
This is the first thing that wasn't his story. So I think it was a challenge, but I think it worked out.
Yeah. Awesome. So go to ifanboy.com and check out the Book of the Month review at the top of the page. And if you've got somebody special in your life, pick it up. I don't know where I'm going with that. Hi. Bad segue. On to the email.
Let's slip a quick email in there.
slip it in there. Our only email comes from Neil, who writes, remember
what? Our only email, just the email we're doing.
Well,
the
only email on the show. I'm sorry.
I wish it was. It's a long backlog.
Our email comes from Neil, who writes, remember when Mark Miller was spreading around the rumor of an aborted Orson Welles Batman feature? Do you have any ideas for incredibly unlikely or even impossible comic book movies that you'd kill to see? Me, I'm thinking of a Wes Anderson movie about the Flash Rogues, with George Clooney as Captain Cold, Bill Murray as Captain Boomerang, and Jason Schwartzman as the new Trickster. Maybe throw in a Wilson brother here and there as needed. Anyway, what do you got?
I have a flamethrower backpack. I can light this whole place on fire.
It's like Bottle Rocket. I love Bottle Rocket.
What happened to Luke Wilson, by the way? He's on those AT&T commercials, blown up like a damn blimp.
That's a fascinating question, actually. I never would have thought
tangential of this has been in the internet all week is the David Lynch interviews about Star Wars.
Yep. You
seen that on the internet?
He turned down Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Yep. Which would have been fascinating.
Well, considering that he went on to do Dune, that gives you an idea of maybe what would have happened.
Yeah, I think we're better off for it. Thank you, Richard Marquand.
Greatest director. Actually, Irving Kirshner was the greatest director. Anyway.
Yes.
So I'd like to see an Irving Kirshner version of...
Hey, he did the most of the Bond movie that Connery came back in.
Never seen him again.
Yeah, he's a very good Bond.
He was a great... Honestly, in all seriousness, Irving Kirshner was a great director. So pick a director and some characters there.
I wish I'd prepared for this.
I think you could do a street-level Scorsese film.
With what characters?
Well, take some street-level Marvel characters.
Well, I was going to say a Quentin Tarantino Punisher.
That would work.
Cheap. Yeah, but that's cheap. It's easy.
Yeah. But that would be good, though.
Yeah.
It needs that humor balance to it.
Yeah.
You could do a Garth Ennis story.
Yeah.
Who's really, like, idiosyncratic, like a Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah.
Like a black-and-white Jim Jarmusch film. Only about the private lives of the heroes. There's no costuming.
Nice.
They just drink coffee and smoke cigarettes and complain.
I love that movie so much. Coffee
and cigarettes. It'd be cool if you wanted to turn that around and do that Scorsese thing and have him do like Alias.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I think that'd be really cool because of the people that you could put around or in the way that you could shoot that.
Okay, here, you guys know a lot about movies. I'm going to throw some directors and then you pick them, all right? Give me a Zemeckis movie.
Anybody,
Fantastic
really.
Four.
Yeah.
You'd do a really good Fantastic Four.
All right, Danny Boyle.
Like the Doom Patrol or something like that. I love Danny Boyle.
Yeah, I love Danny Boyle too.
Everything he shoots is beautiful.
Yeah. All right, Christopher Guest.
Metal Men.
Interesting. Nice. Sofia Coppola.
Pass. She doesn't have a signature.
Soderbergh.
That's good. Like
a big team book.
You could do it. Well, yeah, but you could do if you did like Green Arrow, Green Lantern.
Yeah, you could do that.
And you'd like that Clooney Brad Pitt.
Ooh, a Clooney Brad Pitt Green Arrow Green Lantern.
That'd be all doing the Danny O'Neill Neil Adams stuff. That'd be really
good. You'd have to de-age them a little, but that would be awesome. Because
you could just forward the story along and say it's their reason they're on the road trip is because they're at the end of their careers.
Yeah. I got one. Baz Luhrmann doing the Invisibles.
I haven't read The Invisibles.
I don't even understand.
Well, Baz Luhrmann doing anything Morrison. I think that those two pair really nicely, I think.
The filth.
Anyway, that's a great question.
That's a good game you came up with there. Yeah. Way to save the segment, man.
What about the woman that directed The Punisher? Lexi Alexander.
I'd like to see her take a go at a third Hulk movie.
What about Guillermo del Toro?
Hellboy.
Oh, okay, good. Good answer. What about Zack Snyder?
He doesn't count as a director. Sorry.
Anyway, all right. Shoot us your ideas for directors that could adapt movies or ask any other question at contact@ifanboy.com.
When you said Zack Snyder, I think I was thinking about the guy from Scrubs. I'm going to take back my comment.
You said Zach Braff.
Zach Braff. Yeah. Zack Snyder directed what?
Well, Zack Snyder, Zach Braff directed a movie.
Two movies.
Two movies, whatever.
How many movies you directed?
In his head?
More than that.
All right. So contact@ifanboy.com. Email us. Thank you.
Zach Braff could do the Justice League, the Giffen era Justice League.
Sure. Sure he can.
Do it like Scrubs.
Sure he
can. Only if he could use Coldplay in the first scene. Hey,
the shins.
I really still love that album. If you want to help iFanboy, if this is an important thing to you, there are lots and lots of ways to do it, and we want to thank everybody who does. You, as we said, you make everybody possible. But if it is a thing that you've been thinking about, then please, you know, act on that and help us out. The easiest thing you can do, the best way to do it, would be to become an iFanboy member. I know you've heard about this a lot. iFanboy members, you can pay $4 a month or $42 for a year one time, and you'll get an iFanboy prize pack, some buttons, some stickers, and a random comic book. Or you can be the Super All-Star member and go for $10 a month or $100 a year, and you'll get the same thing plus a t-shirt. You don't have to do that, but if you do, we really, really appreciate it. And it's just one way that you can tell us that you know this is important to you and you wanted to keep going. And there may be a little something else for the members. There's been – I mean you can't deny there's been some damn good stuff given away this year.
Yeah.
Signed, beautiful books, big hardcovers, original art. We're just going to do more of that. We know more people now than we did when we started that. So think about that for a little bit.
I'm not lying when I say that I've got a stack up to my knee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stuff to give away to members. I'm looking at it right
What's
now.
Really cool is that some of the creators have heard about what we've been doing, and now they're like offering us stuff, mm-hmm. like because they want to thank you all for reading their books. So that's a great way too.
And then if that's not your thing, and that's fine, we understand that. If you can't become a member, click on the banners at ifanboy.com. Visit the sponsors, the people that we talk about in these podcasts. We're not just doing it to bug people. They're sponsoring the show. So help support them and let them know that iFanboy sent you along so that they keep supporting the show and things like that. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon anytime you want to buy anything from Amazon.com. And we get this question a lot. There's a little button that says powered by Amazon under the search field. Click on that. It's going to take you to regular Amazon.com. And then if you want to go the extra mile, just bookmark that as your regular Amazon link, and you never have to worry about it again. And then we just get a little cut of something. You won't even notice it. You won't feel a thing. You could also go to the ifanboy.com/store. Don't worry, baby. Don't feel a thing. ifanboy.com/store, and you can buy any of the t-shirts. You know what? I don't think we're mentioning the Herm shirt anymore.
Yeah, we're not.
You're gone.
Yep.
If you waited, you missed your chance. But we have the Battle Pug shirt. That's a $20 shirt with original art of a barbarian on a pug by Mike Norton, superstar artist, good man. And then there's the Power and Responsibility shirt, and those are picking up.
There's been a run on them, it could even be said.
So there's some of those left. Those are $15, and you can do that. Again, thank you everybody for supporting the show, for listening to the show, to whatever it is you do. We need you. We couldn't do it without you, and we are eternally grateful. Thank you. That's all.
Josh just mentioned the giveaways. We do members giveaways, and you have to be a member to be eligible for these giveaways. We've been doing them every episode this month, and last week we gave away the 4 criminal trades to a criminal in his own right, D.B. Cooper. I know your game, D.B. Cooper, and I'm on to you. Me and Tommy Lee Jones are on to you. This week, the Funimation prize pack, which includes Beck, Afro Samurai, Vexil, and Witchblade DVDs. There's like 6 DVD sets in this giveaway. That's insane. And the winner of this giveaway is Luke Whelan, or Whalen.
All right. Congratulations,
Luke Whelan or Whalen. You're the winner of the Funimation prize pack giveaway. Next week is the Grand Image Comics giveaway, which includes the Image United blank cover with a sketch from Eric Larson and a signed cover. It's a sketch of a dragon.
Yep.
You can see a picture of that on iFanboy.com right at the top.
Which you're going to have to pry from my cold, dead hands.
But also, in addition to that, you're getting about eight trades.
Yeah.
You'll have Ron's chocolate fingerprints all over.
I tried to wipe it off, and it's smeared.
I've been keeping that until somebody wins it, and every day I kind of look at it, and I'm like, oh, Larson's so good.
Do you own any dragon pages?
No, he doesn't sell them.
Oh, that's weird.
What did he do with them? He's got 10 years or 15 years.
It's his opus. It's his thing. Yeah, he doesn't sell that.
Does he have them all bound together in a huge book in his house?
No, I think they're actually in a large stack in the Image office, actually. I think he tweeted a picture. They were getting ready to do one of those archive editions, and there's literally like a 4-foot stack of original pages.
So. And they're all hand-lettered. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, the holidays are coming up. You might have noticed. I think we mentioned it about 8,000 times this past show. We want to let you know about our schedule going forward, because people want to surprise you, or schedule for those of our UK friends. A couple weeks from now, December 27th, there is going to be no Pick of the Week show. That is a Sunday after Christmas. Instead, you will be getting our annual year-end all-media spectacular where we talk about all of our favorite stuff that happened. There will be some comics in there. There will be some things. But that'll be that show.
Third year of that?
Yeah.
Fourth year of that.
Fourth
wow.
year of doing that, yeah.
That's insane.
That is spectacular. Yeah. And then the next week, January 3rd, there will not be a Pick of the Week show, not because we don't love you, but because there's no new comics that week.
Because Diamond hates you.
Diamond doesn't like you. Plus, you know, sometimes we take a week off. We don't get to do that much, right? And you're all thinking, oh, you didn't do the video show forever. And I say, we were still working, buddy, just because you weren't paying attention, sir.
If you were around last year, you know, we took the weekend between Christmas and New Year's off. We probably do that regularly. That's what we're doing again. Just this year, just so happens, Diamond did the same thing this year.
Yeah. They took a cue from us for a change.
But there's one book coming out from DC that no one knows what it is.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting because there's a good chance that we'll know about it the week before, because that's when it's actually shipping, and we'll see if any retailers screw it up and start selling it.
The retailers had to sign an affidavit saying they wouldn't sell it.
Oh, I got a strong feeling that there's at least one retailer in the New York City area that's gonna sell it. So if you live in the Village, you know where to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's speculation. I don't know anything for sure.
So there's no books that week. There's no show that week. Yep. Enjoy your holiday weekend time.
Yes, exactly. But there are comics coming out over the next few weeks, and you're not going to want to miss them. And in fact, speaking of not missing, come Monday, the aforementioned Eric Larson comes on iFanboy Talksplode, don't miss, to talk about the next issue project number 2, Silver Streak Comics number 24, Eric Larson's Golden Age anthology series. The second issue has been coming out, is coming out on this coming Wednesday. So I talked to Eric for a long while, and you get to hear about his love for the Golden Age comics and a lot of history about them. And there's some, I read the issue already. It's really awesome. If you're fan of comics, you should pick that up. So be sure to go to iTunes, search for iFanboy, subscribe to the Don't Miss One, or go to iFanboy.com tomorrow to download it.
Yes, and make sure you go to iFanboy.com. That website is our pride and joy. You can read the Pick of the Week podcast that Connor wrote and the discussion that takes place underneath it, and then all the other articles that go up all the time. A lot of news this week from DC, basically.
A lot of news.
They put out a lot of news.
And it was Marvel DC went, news.
News week.
Yeah. And Marvel just went, no, it's cool. Go for it. We'll just hang back. That's totally fine. And there's all that sort of great stuff. You can go to ifanboy.com/about. You can see who we all are. You can see some lovely pictures that look better than we do in real life. And you can see the social networking links on how to hook up with us and other places on the internet, which sounded dirtier than it was. Plus, you can watch the video show there. That is back. It is in full steam, full swing, as you know. This last week was the holiday gift guide. We went through 13 different books that you can get for different types of people who like different things, or just all stuff you want to read for yourself. All good books. And then this next week coming up, you know, there's a big guy in cartooning, Jeff Smith. Yep. So a little something about that.
Yeah, it's going to be good. If you like Jeff Smith, you're going to want to check out this episode. That's for sure.
Or if you've always wanted to know.
Yeah.
Know what?
Or something. Anything.
You can also read Josh's Book of the Month review, too. It's also on iFanboy.com. You can email us at contact at iFanboy.com. I'm holding the microphone now like an old crooner.
like Bing Crosby?
I don't have it on the table anymore. I'm holding it. Ba 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 boom.
I do that.
Leave a message for us at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. That's our voicemail line. Any comments, questions, or concerns, or if you want to sing to us.
Hey, Bill, if you don't mind, break down the rebird on that a little bit. I just want to. Oh, that's nice. Go ahead.
I'm done with my part.
Oh, blackest night, pick a blue.
All right, if you like that, then go to iTunes and write a review of this show as well as the iFanboy Don't Miss Show. as well as the iFanboy video show. Let people know about it. Spread the word. Help us out. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is our, what, our third week in a row of going off the rails?
We keep doing it late at night. It's just keep happening.
We gotta blaze new trails, you know? Yeah.
I feel like one time, and one time only, we should record at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I'm down for that.
Just see what happens.
Josh isn't.
That's going to mess my whole day up.
One time, though, Josh. You could do it for one time, I bet.
Where were you guys when I had insomnia last week? I'm laying in bed just mind erasing.
You would have been funny. You would have been depressed. We need 3 a.m., Josh.
Be funny is depressed. That week, a few weeks ago, when shit went crazy, I had a rope around my neck the whole time. You don't know. I'm like Lenny Bruce.
Oh, boy.
All right, then. On that note.
On that high note.
Happy holidays. Happy Christmas.
We got one more show and then Christmas.
This time of year is stressful. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'd like to say thanks, everybody, for coming along and listening. Good night. I'm Josh. They're singing Deck the Halls, but it's not like Christmas at all.